In short, how did the name Serial Killer Whisperer come about? I mean, with 26 books and your career, it was bound to happen at some point, but when did the name stick, you think?
The name stuck about 5 or 6 years ago because I was doing an interview, I think, for one of the women's magazines, and they said, oh, you're like the horse whisperer, but for serial killers. And so it sort of went from there in that interview. They then juxtaposed those two nicknames together, and I've sort of run with it because I spent a lot of time doing interviews with killers, and other people are writing similar things, but they aren't actually getting it from their first source. So that's where it started, and I've had the nickname ever since.
Yeah, I mean, Monsters Who Murder, which I've been following on and off for so long now, because as I mentioned to you, I run a crime show here on 2SER. You know, Monsters Who Murder, what does it entail as a show, and what do you like to explore on it?
Well, what we do there is, rather than focus on doing a examination of the case and who's who and all of that, what we do is we go straight to the interviews with the serial killers or the killers or the school shooters or whatever. And though we call it serial killer confessions, it's actually any sort of confession.
Yeah, yeah.
And we actually go through it. We go through the body language. We go through tics and words that they use. We go through just sort of how they represent themselves. You know, some of them we have done 5 and 6 episodes, and they sort of twist and turn every sort of story they have that they don't confess. And then others we have, they start with the confession. Then it's about how they tease it out and go through, well, what happened here and what happened there. And so it's a fascinating insight to see how these people think and how they present themselves in these sorts of like worst case scenario interviews.
Yeah. I mean, is there a playbook that you operate with in unraveling these stories, or do you have to kind of approach each one as a fresh slate because of how diverse those characters can be and how they react to being questioned?
Well, what I like to do is I don't do any research from other people's documentaries and anything, because most documentaries or podcast interviews and things like that, they come with an agenda. So yeah. I go into it raw. I know of the case, I know who was who. And so when they bring up names and victims and stuff, I definitely know. And a lot of the cases I know anyway, because my brain is like an encyclopedia of murder. But I then just sort of go through it, and I sit there with nothing else. I have to focus on what they're saying, because sometimes it can be just a micro expression which proves that what they're saying is a complete lie, or that they want to tell more, but sometimes that the police actually get in the road of those confessions, like with Todd Colehep, where he just wanted to talk and the police officer kept stopping him after every sentence so he could write down every sentence, which is extremely frustrating.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been working through Candace Fox's Two Sisters Detective mm-hmm. Agency at the moment in preparation for speaking with her soon. And I know
wow.
from all of the talks that I've seen recently with her, she has so many terrifying stories of like sitting down with these big, terrifying personalities and, you know, keeping an eye on the pencils on the table because she's worried it might be like a weapon.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, how do you get over that fear, or rather, how do you deal with that fear in sitting down for these interviews? And is that something that still plagues you as you've been doing this for so long?
It's something that people, like, it's weird that our podcast is called Monsters Who Murder, because literally killers aren't monsters. They're very average. They're very human. They're very flawed.
Mm.
And so we expect them to be, you know, this snarling madman who's just going to jump across the table and sort of pick you up and eat you. But they aren't. Often they have a story to tell, and they're wanting that one person who's going to come to it with no judgment and know that what they're going to say is going to be heard. It could be complete lies. But, you know, like people like Ivan Milat says nothing but lies. But it's about going through that story with them and being able to identify what's the truth, what's not the truth, what have they embellished, what have they purposefully left out. So it's not about the pencil on the table, because it shouldn't be one, but it's more about being able to look them in the eye and realize that they're looking into you as much as you're looking into them.
Yeah, I guess, you know, you mentioned Ivan Milat there, and I remember that you made some headlines for challenging a bit of the consensus about his story without actually getting into that, because that'd bog us down for hours.
That's a book.
Yeah, yeah. Why is it important to you to speak out and challenge the consensus on these big names, despite how many eggshells you might have to tread on to do so?
I tread on a lot of eggshells, and that's just something that is part of my personality. So I'm one of these people who has no filter. So if I have something to say, I'll say it. And with the backpacker case, there is so much compelling evidence that proves that there is more to the story than what we know. So what Ivan has to say is a third person narrative, but at the same time, he talks about being in places where these things occurred, but he's not the active participant. Mm. So it's things like that he says that you say, well, okay, who else is involved and who's the secondary person when he's talking about himself as the backpacker killer. So there is a lot, and yes, that's actually a book that's still ongoing now. I don't have my source because he has passed away. It's now there is some gaps I'm finding that I'm going to have to research elsewhere to find. But a lot of what I have, I mean, I converse with him for 20 years, so I have a lot of material.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, as you say, like the idea that there maybe is someone else there, you wouldn't want that to go left uncovered. And I think that, you know, as you say, you tread on so many eggshells, and I admire your courage in doing so, because being part of the, you know, crime writing community here in Australia, I know that getting to the truth of things is always something that people are passionate about, despite how many risks there may be in getting to it. So Amanda, thank you so much for joining us here on The Daily. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and thank you over the years for your work on Monsters Who Murder, which has kept my ear holes entertained for many hours.
Excellent. It's been absolutely wonderful to be here, and I could have spoken for about 5 hours. If
I know. I there's a stern look from outside the studio window, tapping on the watch at the moment. All right.